Hello and welcome to Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. My name is Victor Sosa, joined as always by the legend Les Thatcher. Back after a brief but rather filling absence on my part, at least.
Yes, we are back, and Vic is filled. We may spend half of this hour running down the menu from the cruise ship that he spent a week on. And how much of it did you taste? Of that 40%? No.
No.
90.
Closer to 100. I think there was one place I didn't get to. That was about it. I mentioned the less off the air here. It is a 90-plus degree day in the greater New York City area, and I'm in this room with the door shut and no air conditioning. But I'm not complaining because I need a sauna after everything I ate and had to sweat out over the last.
How much weight did you put on? Honest now, don't lie to us.
Almost 6 pounds. I'm not making that up.
That's about 3/4 of a pound a day, right?
Yeah, yeah. Then now I spent this past week before some of our commitments came up near the end of the week or the reason we're here on Sunday as opposed to Friday, working out, getting a lot of steps in, and thankfully all of that has already come off. Praise God. But but yeah, about 6 pounds, man. Yeah, it was serious, man.
These
cruise ships are part, especially when you get into the bigger ones on any line, it's Carnival, Royal Caribbean, all of them. They're part hotel, they're part amusement park, they're part seriously top shelf restaurants. I mean, anyone who's never been on one of these big old ships, I'm talking about 4,000 or 5,000 plus. And the ship I was on was at one point one of the biggest or the biggest cruise ship in the world. It's since been surpassed, but over 5,000, close to 6,000 people can fit on it. Obviously, since the pandemic and all, and gradually increasing capacity, was not quite that full on this sailing. It was something about 70 or 80% filled to capacity. But they really do have, I mean, top shelf restaurants that you would pay hundreds upon hundreds of dollars to eat at if they were on land. And, you know, when you're paying for that kind of stuff, and they don't charge the same, don't get me wrong. I mean, they have plans where you can pay for X amount of meals at certain restaurants. There are also a ton of restaurants and places to eat on board the ship that are absolutely free with your cruise fare. You don't have to do these upcharge restaurants. You know, my girlfriend and I really actually do enjoy those restaurants and feel that they're worth the premium, especially when you consider where we're from and how much a really, really good restaurant costs in New York City. When you compare what you have access to on the ship for the price you have access to it, because you pay one price and you can eat at any of those restaurants or all of them.
The parking in New York City costs what the restaurant on the boat costs. Right?
Oh, Mike, are you kidding? Listen, it's insane. So, you know, to me, especially being in this part of the country, even that upcharge, which isn't cheap, is more than worth it because you get 5 or 6 on that ship, really top shelf restaurants that you would, you know, it would cost you a week's salary to go through. On land. So it was more than worth it to try out all those different places. And the ship for us is a real deal. Like, we don't really care where the ship goes, because our basic premise is, if there's some place that we want to visit, we don't want to be there for 6 or 8 hours. You know, I want to spend 5 or 6 days there. So I'm going to fly there and explore those particular places that the ship is going to port in. But most people do like to go do those excursions. So our thing is, we never get off the ship. You know, there's so much to see and explore, particularly on those bigger ships, again, with Royal Caribbean, that it's like, you know what?
I've got a smart-ass remark to make here, that when everybody else is off doing the excursions, there's no lines at the buffet line, is there?
You got that right. Are you kidding?
You could get right through.
You get right through.
There's no waiting.
That's right. Yeah, man, come on, priorities. But that is part of it. But, you know, in all seriousness, you know, 3/4 of the boat, usually, if not more, get off at these ports. And this thing is a floating hotel with all sorts of other great things on it. Like, why wouldn't I take the opportunity to explore it, where you can get in and get out and experience all these things while everybody's gone, as opposed to what it looks like when it's jam-packed and the lines are down the hall?
Yeah. You know, you're talking about all the things. Norwegian Cruise Lines TV commercial.
Yeah.
I see that really cool go-kart track on the top.
Yes,
of it.
Yeah.
And I think, damn, I could spend a lot of time up there.
Yeah, they got a go-kart track. I think, I want to say Carnival has one.
Do they have
on
car hops?
Too.
Can I park my go-kart and get fed to up there?
No, but it's not far from a restaurant.
All right. Hell. Should we talk about wrestling?
I guess. It's not like anything happened while we were away.
Well, you know, we were talking about cruise lines, and I got to thinking that maybe Sasha and Naomi could...
they've got plenty of time.
Get a wrestling gig on the cruise line.
I'll show up on the next Jericho cruise, maybe.
There you go. Yeah, that's right. I forgot. Sure, Chris, among his other accomplishments, is a cruise captain or something.
It is. I believe he uses Royal Caribbean as well. Don't hold me to that because I haven't been on any of those cruises, but I think that's the cruise line he utilizes for those cruises. But yeah, obviously, you know, it's funny, like the longer it took us to realize it was going to take a few days to get together, I think the better it turned out because more stuff just kept happening.
Yeah, there you go. You know, you and I talk, we might as well start with Sasha and Naomi. We were going to get to them sooner or later anyway, in no particular order. But we were talking before we started recording, and I mentioned that I had read where Punk had, I don't know, on some social media had written, and I'm sure I read Facebook or Twitter or some damn place. Anyway, he was, you know, and of course the rumor or not rumor, but, you know, the people talking that a lot of people in the locker room at WWE are pissed off at Sasha and Naomi. And Punk's point was that, you know, even in a situation, if you don't like somebody else on the roster, you support them because you're all in this together in many ways. And the other thing is you yourself are not indispensable, or, you know, you can be disposed of, and you may come in a situation like this where you would like some support. And I thought, yes, absolutely. That's true. And in that particular situation, it's not a case whether you're buddies and you eat dinner together or even talk to each other. You know, you are brothers or sisters of a particular union that has actually never been formed. So, yes, I agree with him on that. What do you think?
I'll read you the tweet verbatim and tell you exactly what I think. He said, "Doesn't matter if your opinion of your coworker is positive or negative. Stand with them because they'll do the same thing to you and you'll wish someone helped. Trust me, you're expendable. Together, you're unstoppable." And so to his point about whether or not people actually like Sasha or are upset with her, or there's no sympathy in the locker room for either of the two of them deciding to walk away, there's a lot of things I think about this or have thought over the course of the last 5 or 6 days. I think the basic thing, just getting down to the brass tacks of the issue from a professional wrestling perspective, is I am blown away by the amount of people possibly in the locker room as well as out here on these websites and fans who are tweeting or sharing their opinion and just folks in or around this crazy game of pro wrestling who are not, I don't want to say approving. You can think what you want about what the decision they made. But the idea that folks are perhaps annoyed at the idea that these two people walked out based on the fact that they didn't like the direction for what they were going to be doing, they had the nerve, it seems to me at least, to ask logical questions about where they were going, how it was going to help them, where they were going to go from here, why there was no focus on the thing that they were asked to focus on, the women's tag team division and the tag team championships. Nobody gave them good answers, and it seems to me that they only did what not too long ago everybody used to do, and now apparently it's frowned upon in this establishment to actually think for yourself and want to protect yourself.
Apparently, yes. Well, you know, and that's it too. Are some of these people actually mad at themselves, not Sasha and Naomi, because they didn't step up and do the same thing? And you're right. I've heard it when I was a wrestler. Coming up in July will be my 62nd anniversary around this goofy industry. And it's always, you know, there's always people that have complaints and don't, voice them or don't take them to the proper people. And yet somebody else does, they'll say, "What's that complainer?" You know, it's just crazy. But let me say this. From a historical perspective, I can guarantee you this is older in the business than my 62 years. And the result in many ways is the same. And in every situation, I would guess the promotion is rubbing their hands and saying, good, we've created a division. And I don't mean like a weight division. I mean a division of the talent. So it's not going to happen too often or again for a while because there are people in the locker room are mad because they did walk out, which is great for management because, you know, that's what I said to you, and we'll talk about that too. There's a history of promotions separating people for financial reasons or because one maybe is more talented than the other. I mean, that could be heel wrestlers and their managers or tag teams, you know, where a promoter might see a way to make more money with a guy as a single than with the team. And so he might call that guy into the office separately and say, look, you know, if you didn't have a parking, I can't afford a team right now, but I got this big push in mind for you, but you've got a part, it's up to you. And many guys will turn their back on the partner or the manager or the, you know, whatever. And go with promotion. Now, when Roger Kirby and Dennis Hall and I in 1966 decided to do the Cousins thing, right? We realized that everything wouldn't be six-man tags, and that there would be nights that one of the three of us would work a single while the other two guys worked a tag. Well, one of the things that we set up when we started this with promotions was we all got paid the same. So if you and I say Roger and I are in the main event in a tag match and Dennis is semifinal or even another step down from there, whatever we get in the main event, he gets as well. But the thing that we set up amongst ourselves for the very reason of what we're talking about now is we made a pledge to one another that if at some point a promoter called, say, Roger, hey, why don't you come in? I got an idea and I'd like to run it by you. Roger would say, sure, and Les and Dennis are coming with me. But we made a promise to each other that, you know, we wouldn't separate. In other words, if we wanted to separate, that was, you know, entirely. Like when we went to Charlotte in 67, there was thoughts, and it had been laid out to George Becker, who was the booker, of us doing something the Freebirds did years later, was, you know, like we had been doing in Louisiana, is doing the three partners. And then, you know, different combinations in different tag team situations, and of course, working six mans as well. But George came up negative on the idea. So, but then the three of us, and I said, cool, you know, he wants to put you two guys, good. And so it worked out for us, for all three of us, as it were. But we made the decision together that, okay, that's cool. They didn't say, hey, Les, you go get lost because this guy's offering us this. And I didn't. Actually, I came out better in that territory at that point because I ended up working six mans with Becker and Weaver and got more mileage out of the territory than either Roger or Dennis. But still, it was, we stuck together because we realized that it was not uncommon for promoters to try to separate talent. And so, yeah. But, you know, I feel, I hope that they both, you know, are set up financially and so forth that this is not going to hurt them. Now, I don't know how long Sasha's contract is, but I know a friend of mine who's not privy to a lot of the inside things said, oh, well, I said, she's not going anywhere. He's mentioned she can go. I said, I don't know the length of her contract, but she's there. They don't want to let her out. And then 90 days past that. So if she's got another year, she's actually got a year and 90 days. I think who will end up taking the worst hit long-term will be Naomi out of this because she doesn't have the stroke or hasn't been pushed to the level that Sasha has. What do you think?
I think that's entirely possible and will end up probable because I don't know that her family would want to rock the boat given their position in the company. But if they decide to use their leverage on her behalf, the entire stroke of the family is considerable.
Right, right. I hope it works out. But you know what? I see no problem with a talent going in and sitting down with whether it's John Laurinaitis or Vince or the writer who wrote the segment or whatever, and saying, look, you know, because there's nobody, unless you're just green as grass, you're not going to turn somebody loose. I understand that. But both of these girls have been around a while, so they have some semblance of, you know, an idea of what they can do well and what makes sense for them or what works well for them. And let's face it, you know, we're all in this boat. I don't care what your job is. If you're not doing something you really like and want to do, you'll do it, but it won't be as good, or, you know, you won't put as much passion and care into it as you would if it was something you had that passion for. And so I think that's important in overall thing of the business. You know, it's not, well, she wants her way. Maybe her, you know, that's one of the things that I know. So many of the great bookers, let's take Wahoo, for example, who drew money in a lot of territories. He knew how Wahoo McDaniel could draw money. And if you were going to book him, you need, you know, one of the things you say, hey, here's my ideas, Eddie. Kick him around. You know, what do you think? And he's going to draw on what he did in Texas or in Carolinas or in Tampa or wherever and say yes or no, or I think we could shape it. And if you're smart, you're going to pay attention. I mean, there's got to be a mutual professional respect there that goes with the territory. And I don't mean a wrestling territory either. Just, you know, am I making sense? I hope.
You are. I'm just going to come back to my basic point on this and bring Cody into this in a different way as well, in that, you know, Cody, if you've seen any of his interviews in the last couple of months, particularly the one with Steve Austin is the one I'm thinking about because I just watched it the other day. He says, and I'm paraphrasing, he does not use these exact words, but if you watch that conversation, he basically says, I'm going to sink or swim doing now at this point in my life what I think works. No matter what anybody tells me or wants me to do, it's going to be me who determines whether or not this works out for me, because I have enough time in this that I think I understand what works for me. And so when someone, as he referenced in another interview, remember, I can't wait for this first writer to come bring me a promo, and I'm going to look at him and say, yeah, it's great. And then as soon as he walks away, I'm going to ball it up and go out there and do whatever I want to do. And it's like, you know, Cody is telling you, you know, yes, does he work with the boss? Yes. Does he talk to the boss? Yes. At the end of the day, when he gets out there, he's already made up his mind. He's going to do what he thinks is best for him. And he says in the conversation with Austin and in a few other places, you know, essentially what fell apart in for him, AEW, from a booking standpoint, is because I was thinking about too many other people and I was not thinking about what works best for me, because in that situation, really what would have worked best for him would have been better for the company. And he's not going to make that mistake again. And to me, the bigger problem here isn't that Sasha and Naomi were thinking for themselves, even if you believe that because they were heading into featured matches on the next pay-per-view, according to the alleged plan that they walked out on, that there's nothing wrong with that. And I might actually be inclined to agree with you. But I cannot fault someone who is looking at the situation and thinking that's not what's best for them and trying to figure out a way that everybody can be happy, including themselves. I mean, who wants to come to work and be miserable about what they do? The bigger problem is that too many people in that locker room, we can sit here and talk about Vince McMahon's booking being the problem, and it is. But the other part of that problem that we don't often talk about is that everybody takes the nonsense they're handed and says, okay. Who is saying, no, Vince, this doesn't work for me? Or no, why can't we do this? Or no, when will we do that? We don't hear those stories. Maybe it's happening. I don't know. But we don't hear that stuff.
I was just going to say, we know high profile.
Yeah. But
Steve walked. Austin walked out. Foley's walked out.
Yep.
Two are off the top of my head, and I'm sure there's a few. But, and of course, these guys had the stroke, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But, you know, when we stop and talk about that, I realize the women's division isn't the most outstanding in any of these promotions, quite frankly. They've got, you know, a few ladies that can go, and the rest are, it almost comes down to eye candy, and I hate to say it, almost ashamed to say that, but that's the truth. But the point is, I'm getting that, is I was sitting here thinking while you were talking, is Sasha and Bailey had one hell of a match in that first Brooklyn show that NXT, how many years ago was that?
Oh, God. Now probably 5 or 6, maybe more years ago.
Yeah, at least. And because that match stood out to me for several reasons, because here was two girls working their ass. I mean, this wasn't what you would call a women's match. This was a wrestling match. And one of them, I forget which one, used a short arm scissors. I thought to myself, oh my gosh, you've been working with Regal, right? Because a lot of young people don't know what the hell to call that, a short arm scissor. But anyway, so yes, so she has been a feature player for 5 or 6 years. So to me, here again, as a former booker, as a promoter, as any damn thing, if I've got an idea, yes, I'm going to say, hey, here's my idea. And maybe somebody is relaying that to her. But if she comes and says, Les, I need talk. Okay, you know, here's what I think. This could we need to change this for this. I'm not going to say for sure I'm going to do it, but I'm going to say for sure I'm going to pay attention and listen, because she's earned that over these last 5 or 6 years, right?
Yeah, I can't argue with that. I don't understand why you wouldn't take her input into consideration. And we're not saying that Vince McMahon didn't, but ultimately, apparently, he decided to stick with his plan. And we saw the classic good cop, bad cop stuff, right? Because when you look at the tweets that were allegedly, and again, that's allegedly, coming from a friend of either Sasha or Naomi's about the situation, presumably directly from one of the two, we don't know. They talked about how the first meeting, at least, with Vince went great, and it was everybody else who got sideways with them. And, you know the drill on that. Everyone's had their stories about that. It's even famously in Mick Foley's book, Unintentionally, about how Vince was awesome and it was that damn J.J. Dillon who kept screwing him over. Come to realize, obviously, right? You get into the company, yes, and you realize it's not J.J. J.J.'s doing what Vince is telling him to do, because Vince, yes, is going to be the face, yes, in all of this.
I've had that conversation. I just think of a story J.J. told me about that one time. Yes. I forget who the guy was, but they were doing payoffs, and it was one of the top guys, and Vince wrote a number down for JJ to put that amount of money in an envelope, and JJ made a comment. He said, I think maybe he should be getting more. Vince says, just put that in the envelope or something, right? And so anyway, then the payoffs are out, and this guy comes back to, right, hey, Vince says, that damn JJ.
Of course he did.
So, yes, well, you know, I've said to both he and JR, those guys take heat they don't deserve.
Right.
Because they're just, they're speaking for the people that pay them. And that's one of the things, is the people, you know, that saves you from hating the owner. You hate management. So. But yeah, I remember JJ telling me that story. But so there's, and again, I can't imagine that Sasha is I don't know what she might be demanding. But you know, here's something I'm looking at too as a booker. Naomi hasn't been pushed to the level Sasha has been pushed.
Right.
So fans, or you know, management, I'm sure they don't see the two of them standing at the same level, standing side by side. They're there, but they're not at the same level. But I think if you're putting there here, you got to realize as a booker, what Naomi does, what happens to Naomi also reflects on Sasha and vice versa. So you don't want to sit this up. Well, look at Orton and Riddle, right?
Sure.
Riddle is obviously the younger and the lesser star, but they're still, you can't see that from the way they're put together. I mean, you know it, but it's not, hey, young boy, get your ass in there to get kicked, right? Or something like
right,
that.
Right, right. No, so, nor does Orton treat him as such on television.
No, absolutely. So, yes. So to me, if I'm putting Naomi and Sasha together, then I realize Naomi is the lesser of the two, and I don't mean that in a derogatory way, just I'm looking at it, you know, as the way the fans would perceive them. And so now part of my job is to bring her up, not to bring Sasha down. And to give you an example of that currently going on in AEW with the Blackpool contingent is that Mox and Regal and Dragon are working to make Yuta, bring him up to their level, because they realize, as I realize, and the fans see too, that he is much the lesser light of that group, right?
Yes, and so they're going out of their way, even in these six-man matches, to put the spotlight on him.
Right, and he wins, he catches a fall on TV, you know, or wins, you know, deciding fall or whatever. Yes, so they should be, WWE should be thinking the same, or somebody in WWE should be thinking the same way about Naomi and Sasha.
One other thing I want to mention about Sasha before we move on to the news of the week, and I have no inkling as to whether or not this is true. I presume it to be the case because I am a member of the Screen Actors Guild. They merged with AFTRA, which was the longtime radio union, years ago. And so in New York, I have actually my insurance and all that other stuff through SAG-AFTRA. So I'm technically a member of the Screen Actors Guild. Sasha is on, or was on, Disney Plus a year or so ago as part of the Mandalorian series. She's done television work. She presumably has insurance, potentially retirement, and all that stuff through the Screen Actors Guild. And if you remember a while back when WWE tripped over themselves on this whole, you're going to pay us for all your outside stuff like Cameo and OnlyFans and all that other stuff, and the thing that happened between them and Zelina Vega, who refused and then was let go, where the Screen Actors Guild had reportedly reached out to her or she reached out to them in some way, shape, or form, a conversation was taking place, and had something there potentially move forward with the Screen Actors Guild union behind Zelina Vega, there could have been potentially at least real issues for WWE. Well, it's likely, though I don't know this for a fact, that Sasha Banks has the same access to the Screen Actors Guild. So watch this space.
Yeah. Well, you know, something before we get off this subject too, I've got to throw the whiny little letter that WWE put out.
Go ahead.
Which says everybody should belong to the Screen Actors Guild, right? Because it said it is a scripted.
Well, you'd think.
And that they had 8 hours to develop, or however they put it, their match. And I thought, whiny little bitch. I mean, really? Come on. Seriously? You know what? You know what was only lacking from that statement? At the end, it should have said, touche. You stuck your tongue out at us, by God, we'll stick our tongue out at you, too. Trying to make it, they couldn't perform, they couldn't make a match work in 8 hours. Hey, damn dumbass, we used to make matches work in 5 minutes. What the, you've got talent, you got talent. I don't know what the word, not the icing on the cake, I don't know, it was...
But, you know, have you ever seen this? If you'd never seen a billionaire victim before, it was all in that letter, because as Vince,
poor WWE.
Yes, as Dave talked about earlier in the week, you could read that letter, at least for someone who's had interactions with Vince, as Dave has had a number of them over the years, and know that that was coming from Vince. Those were his words. And it's just, you know, it's par for the course for Vince when something happens that he doesn't like. I mean, listen, how many times do you and I remember him bitching about corporation owning the competition? It's not fair. They're run by a billionaire, and I'm just a little old family business. How can they spend so much money? Eric has access to this ATM, and we're just the little old engine that could from Stanford. And it's like, dude, get out. Anytime he doesn't get his way, this is what you get. That's all. That's all it is.
It's, yeah, but I just had to say that, because when I read that, it really upset me. You know, I thought, what the fuck? Right? It's just, Jesus, childish nonsense.
Yes.
Anyway, let's move. Where are we going from here?
Well, I want to talk about somebody who you used to run with, at least for a limited amount of time, because he ran a lot of people under the table. Ric Flair, who is getting ready to return to the ring.
Would you like a quick synopsis of my opinion? I don't want to see it.
I know.
And God bless Ricky Steamboat.
Yes.
for his statement and the way he said it. And I've just kept my fingers crossed. Ricky has no business wrestling again. He had that serious head problem. And I don't mean mental. I'm talking about, the doctors actually, said you should be dead by all rights. And that was one of the reasons he stopped training people and so forth, because, for fear of getting banged around again. But Rick has a pacemaker. And I know I've read some ex-wrestlers and guys who I respect say, well, it's his call. It is. But I don't want him to do it because I don't want to see this version of the Nature Boy in a ring. I don't, and the people and everybody that's they've talked about doing this, I have respect and caring for all those people. You know, like our rock and roll. My God, I've known Ricky since he was 9 or 10 years old. Robert since he was following his older brother Ricky, who was wrestling around and just trying to get his feet wet in the business. And I love them. At the peak of their run, man, they were amazing. And they've left a legacy that will be damn hard to touch. Do I want to see them today? No, not in the ring. And I don't want to see Flair. And I say this because I care and I respect them all for what they've given and what they've done. And it's just, I'm like Steamer said, he wants the fans to remember him. And I remember the match he's talking about because he and I talked about it too. Because it was a big important match for Jericho, because Jericho called me. I had wanted Chris to come to the 99 Pillman show. And, he couldn't. And when he called me to tell me he was going, that was the WC. That was the Bruise Cruise or whatever before he started having his cruise. But he, they had already booked him on that cruise, so he couldn't make it. And he said, I'm upset too, Les, because I wanted to come because I'm a huge mark for Ricky Steamboat, and I wanted to meet him, and I know he's going to be there. And when I saw them on that Monday night Raw show wrestle, I just smiled because, Jericho is checking off one of his dream matches right there. And they had a good match. And the people were chanting the Steamboat, you've still got it. And he and I talked a few days later, and Ricky is a very unassuming human being. And he said, they chanted, I said, Rick, you're still, at this age, you're in good shape. You're a better worker still than 70% of that roster. I don't care what your age is. And yeah, but I'm glad he turned it down. I assumed that he would when I saw that he was being approached with it because of the medical reason. And I wish, and Flair has a damn pacemaker, for Christ's sake. And no, I don't want to see that. And I don't know what else to say. All these people that we're talking about, if I were running a promotion and had the kind of money that it takes to bring guys like that on board for a night or something, would I use them? Yes, but I would use them as like the baby faces as to cover another, work a baby face corner. One of the younger wrestlers who's got a heel with a manager or something, or, have them be a special referee. I would have them do meet and greet, obviously autographs and photos and stuff, but would I want them to work a match? No, sorry. I mean, they might do a little, throw a punch on somebody or something like that. I've even been guilty of that, but no, I don't want that to happen. And then when I saw, I don't know if the prices they're talking about for these tickets are real or not. Did you see those?
I haven't seen any numbers. What are they saying?
I thought $1,000 for a ringside seat.
Oh, my goodness.
But you got a chair. You got chair. You got a bunch of stuff with that. But I just don't know. I just don't know. And I guess it's going to go on. And I've heard people say, and you know what? I won't discount this either, that Flair would like to die in the ring. Okay. Are we going to kill him? Is that the whole idea? I mean, we've all said that. I've probably said it to you numerous times. You know, I'll probably be doing something wrestling related when I get the call to go to heaven, or I hope heaven, maybe it'll be the other way. I don't know. But so, yeah, but let's don't do it for real. You know, I don't, and all the reasons I don't want it to happen are because I care about the man's health and because I respect all those guys, when they were in their prime, when they were at the top of their game, they were great. They were some of the best ever, and I'll be the first to say it. You know, I'm a huge Boston Celtics fan, and I'm a big Bill Russell fan. Do I want to see Bill Russell on the basketball court? Only if it's on a black and white film, you know, from the original Celtics days. I would love to sit down and talk to him. I'd love to have his autograph. I'd love to have a picture taken with him, or whatever. But no, I don't want to see him out on the court again. How about you?
I would prefer not to. Obviously, he's going to do what he wants to do. And wow, $1,000 a ticket. I'm going to ask you a question about that in just a second. But obviously, you're referring to Ricky Steamboat's statement this week saying that he prefers to be remembered by the matches he had with Chris Jericho a number of years ago, which were absolutely fantastic and probably were better than we had any right to expect Ricky Steamboat to be back then, and don't want to do anything to tarnish that memory, which is why he did not accept what is reportedly a six-man tag team match. Allegedly, it's FTR and Ric Flair against the Rock and Roll Express and one other partner. I would just, at this point, I'm not sure who you could actually get to fill the spot from the era that people remember so fondly of the 80s and 605 on TBS. So I would probably, since we're having this match, whether either one of us like it or not, go ahead and include the guy that Flair's been working out with and just put Jay Lethal on the side of the Rock and Roll Express, honestly, because then there's three guys that Flair trusts implicitly. And a friend of mine mentioned to me yesterday, you know, he was, I don't want to say disappointed in FTR allegedly taking this match because, you know, on some level it signals their support for Flair getting in the ring, which a lot of us think he really shouldn't be doing. And I said, right, you know, that's possibly true. I mean, I imagine it's a dream for them to be in the ring with Ric Flair. But, you know, the other side of that potentially is they're looking at that legend who would be a dream to be in the ring with and thinking, A, we want to make sure his last match is as good as possible, and B, we want to be in there as much as possible to protect him from himself. So maybe there's almost some obligation in their mind because of their love for him to take the match.
I would say, Dax and I have an email relationship, right? We've never actually spoken, but we certainly are on the same page in a lot of things, and seem like we've formed a friendship. And I just think what little I know of him, or what little they've talked about publicly, is yes, they aren't the normal run of the mill current level young wrestlers. They love the history of the business, and they respect and care a lot about those who came before them. And so yeah, I would, and I understand young guys wanting to rub elbow. You know, a couple times I've had people say, "Have you ever wrestled Ric Flair?" And I'd say yes, and I'd say, "Can I touch you?" Sure, why not? I wanted to wrestle Buddy Rogers, right? That's, and I've told you that, right? If there's ever been something that I think I've missed in a career, it was a chance to lock up with my childhood hero. Would I do it? Well, of course, Buddy's gone. Would I do it now? No. I mean, I'd still love to meet him and get photos with him and talk to him and all that, but would I want to wrestle him? No, not now. I mean, I'm a little past Flair's age, too, and Steamer, but I did that thing back in what, 03 or something, 04, with five of my kids. This is after I'd sold HWA, and I did a six man. But I got in, did a couple little things. I think I threw a drop kick, and then got in on the finish. But I didn't, it wasn't about me anyway. It was just, you know, a whole different deal. But no, I don't want to see it. And I, like I say, I say it out of love and respect. I don't say that out of animosity or I'm mad or I look down my nose at those guys. I do not. Or even, you know, at FTR, I hell, if they're not one of the best, maybe the best tag team going today at this point, I don't know, in terms of wrestling, you know.
So the question I wanted to ask with respect to the ticket price, rumored to be $1,000 plus, I would imagine to be ringside for something like this. Now, this is at the Nashville Fairgrounds, so I guess my question is, and I think I've asked you this before, so forgive me, but have you wrestled at the Fairgrounds and you know how many people it holds?
I don't know this particular building, what it holds. No, I do not. I wrestled in the old Fairgrounds Coliseum. I couldn't even tell you what that held. But then the last time I was in that place was back around 1971.
But the place you wrestled was a bigger building, presumably, than the Fairgrounds, that the portion of the Fairgrounds they're going to be utilizing.
I would think so, yes.
Okay.
I would think so, yeah, because... they had horse shows in that building we were in. I don't know if they ever did the circus in there or not. But anyway, yeah, I would think that the old Fairgrounds Coliseum was probably bigger. I don't know for sure.
Okay. Well, I mean, in addition to obviously trying to promote it like it's the biggest deal possible as Ric Flair's last match, $1,000 could also have something to do with the smaller venue and the limited amount of seating that there is available. Again, trying to make it seem like an enormous event.
Sure. But, you know, there's the other thing, too. How extensive is their advertising going to be for this?
Good question.
Have you seen a poster on Twitter or on Facebook?
I've seen some videos on YouTube that I think they've all put to their social media, has Conrad and Mr. Flair. I don't know that I've seen it outside of their own personal pages to this point.
Uh-huh. Because I haven't, you know. I haven't. And, you know, and like I say, I'm not mad at the people that are saying, let him do what he wants. Okay. But I just would rather not, you know. And that's out of having known the man for how many years has he been in the business? I've known him all but one of them.
Yeah, the first year in Minneapolis, right? Because he came to Charlotte after a year, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I've, you know, socialized, partied with him, worked with him on television, in the ring, et cetera, et cetera. And he's a friend. I respect him. Don't always agree with everything he does, but I love him to death. And I don't want to see this because because I'm afraid something might happen, you know. And it's not that the guys that he's going to be against won't try to take care of him. They will. I know they will, you know, but that's not the point, is it? Because you remember seeing him when he was who did he do the bloody mess with in TNA? Was that with Hogan?
Foley,
yeah, okay. That I didn't want to see. You know, I didn't want to see that version of him, and I damn sure don't want to see this one. And I know how, you know, he gets wired. We all do in that situation, and I don't know how much that, you know, pacemaker can put up with. I really don't.
Well, let's hope we don't find out.
Yes, that's the main thing. You know, you're right. He's Richard Fleur and Ric Flair and the Nature Boy. He's going to damn sure do what Nature Boy wants to do, and I'll pray for him and love him and hope it all comes out okay.
Yeah. Well, they've timed it right in terms of where they're going. I know a lot of folks would think, you know, you'd want to do that in the Carolinas, but it's piggybacking in Nashville off of SummerSlam weekend, which is going to be held at a stadium. So you would think that there are people coming in from outside the area of Nashville to do that. So hopefully everything will work out for them financially. They'll get a nice house and it'll be a perfect send-off for the Nature Boy, and there won't be any health repercussions coming out of this.
Well, I would think his son-in-law should be able to cover the bill if they don't draw a big house.
Well, I'd like to think so. I mean, you know, the way Flair talks about it, his son-in-law's house, at the very least, they should be all right in case it doesn't exactly make a mint on this particular occasion. And so the longer the week went, as I mentioned at the start of the program, the more things kept happening, Les. So, you know, we waited around and all of a sudden somebody else left the building although it was not under the same circumstances as Sasha and Naomi. But Stephanie McMahon has now apparently taken a leave of absence. She says time off to look after her family. I'm not exactly sure what that means because it has been reported this week. Triple H is apparently back in the office on a full-time basis, but obviously no one will ever begrudge anyone for taking time off to take care of their family. I just got a kick out of the reporting that Nick Khan will apparently be handling a lot of what Stephanie was doing until she comes back, and the meme started going around social media of Khan systematically picking off one family member at a time until he runs this damn company.
Yeah, yeah. Vince is the next to go.
Yeah, apparently.
Well, Shane's already gone. Vince kicked him out, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. And who knows about, you know, Paul's health. Nobody really knows what his health problem is, do they?
Well, he spoke about it in some, not in full detail, but he shared a little bit with Stephen A. Smith on ESPN, I guess now about a month or so ago. And he's got the defibrillator, apparently, implanted.
Right.
Which is a whole different deal than the pacemaker. And he explained why that was important for the condition he has and why it will prevent him from ever wrestling again. But, you know, he didn't really speak to, you know, the degree of up and running he was at the time. But apparently it's good to hear, at least, that he's apparently back in the office.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. But, you know, you're right. And their kids are growing, right?
Yes.
And you can't fault, as Steph would rather, you know, watching them grow and helping them at this stage opposed to a nanny or, you know, a housekeeper or something. My hat's off to her for that, really.
Yeah, you know, I mean, listen, we're just sitting here spitballing. It's totally understandable after the year that entire family has had. You know, that's
right.
A lot, not just for mom and dad, but for the kids to see their dad going through all that and how mom manages it and everything. That, you know, as
sure.
You mentioned, those three kids are getting older, and maybe after the trauma, honestly, of the last few months, she thought, you know what, these kids are growing fast, and I'd like to spend some time here at home, maybe sort of recenter everything, but also enjoy them while they're here.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. You know, I think a lot of us from the business would say that. I know, well, Flair mentioned he realized he hadn't been the father that he should have been.
Yeah.
JR said the same thing. I'm going to say it too. And a lot of guys are going to say it. You know, the business ate your life up. You know, your family was secondary. It's a horrible thing to say, but that's basically, you know, the way it ends up. And so, yes. So I, you know, good for her. And I hope she has fun as well, because it doesn't hurt to get the pressure off of people that's been in the position she's been in for so long either.
Absolutely. Short on time here on this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly, so there's not going to be a big old rundown of what happened on TV this past week. If there's something you've been dying to say about it, though, feel free. I was going to look ahead to what we've got on Dynamite this week, unless you got anything else you want to talk about.
No. The deal with Dragon getting his ankle...
Oh, yeah.
Between the ramp and the ring. And I know a lot of people, I've watched that video. And now, I don't know that they set this spot up or whether he actually, it was a slip and he got his foot down in there, but I know it turned into a spot. And the reason I'll tell you that, I mentioned to you yesterday when we talked, they can tell you what they want. But on two occasions, as he's selling that ankle and trying, you know, and working like he's trying to get it out, he's calling the referee over. The referee comes over, and you can see by his body language, and he's telling him, and I'm getting, you know, it's like, get one of them heels over here to start putting the boots to me. Get one of those heels. And so on the second time, if you get to see this, the referee drifts off to the right side of toward the right side of the screen and grabs. Oh, who the hell did he grab? I forget now. But anyway, whoever they went right back and started kicking Dragon in the leg. So it turned into an angle, even if it wasn't to begin with. So, but I think the Blackpool thing to me is working out really well. The Jericho Appreciation Society of sports entertainers. I just don't see it. I don't. I think You know, Chris himself is a strength there, and the other guys are bit players, and I don't mean that in a derogatory way. It's just it's the way they've been used there on that show. I am interested in Punk and the Cowboy. I think, you know, that's going to be an interesting match. And you mentioned a couple that you you thought you'd like to see, too, on their upcoming pay-per-view. What was that?
I'm definitely interested in seeing what they do with Wardlow and MJF. I'm also interested to see who's going to be in these Owen Hart Cup finals, particularly with the two very interesting, I think, matches we have this week on Dynamite on the women's half of the bracket, the semifinals, Toni Storm versus Britt Baker, a match they have been pointing towards with interviews for almost a month now, and Kyle O'Reilly on the men's side versus Samoa Joe. Obviously, the winner there is going to be in the finals. If you look at the brackets, you would assume Samoa Joe versus Adam Cole. You never know. But regardless, whoever ends up in those final matches, I think, will be very interesting, particularly if Joe actually makes it through. And so, yeah, I think there's quite a few matches as uneven, actually as poor as the TV has been over the last month. They still seem to be heading into this show with a number of matches that I, for one, at least, am very interested in seeing.
Yeah, I am too. And as we said earlier, I think the Blackpool, the way they're handling Yuta and trying to, you know, build his image up, and they're doing it. I mean, just and can you realize what he's going to learn just hanging out with those three guys?
I can't imagine the amount of stuff he's already taken in from having the opportunity to be around those guys on a somewhat regular basis, particularly on obviously television days, where you get a chance to just sit around and talk to these guys and roll around in the ring potentially and just learn and have that opportunity. Is just, you can't put a price on that kind of knowledge.
No, you absolutely cannot. You absolutely cannot. I do want to say, you know, someone had told me that for sure they had seen it visually, that Jade has been working out at least once or twice a week in the ring with Bryan Danielson, with Dragon. And I said, that's great. That's great. And I hope she improves. And the reason I'm saying this is, is he going to be a great teacher? Well, of course he is. You know, because a lot of Regal is in Bryan's teaching as well. But the thing of it is, everybody, just because you've got a great teacher doesn't mean you're going to be a great student. That's my point. I don't know how good she can get. There is a chance she will get a little better, or she could get great. I don't know. But at this point, she still is not, in my eyes, wearing any championship belt that I would want to put on a lady at this point in time. You know, so let's hope she's certainly training with the proper guy that, you know, that she's able to, you know, but a lot of it comes down to her mental, you know, can she mentally pick it up? Can she physically do it? I don't know. And when I say that, I've had a lot of practice in finding out, you know. So I've told, you know, I've had people say to me, well, if you train that guy, I'll no. I said, don't book somebody because they trained with me. See what they're doing. I know how to train people. That doesn't mean they physically or mentally can adjust to becoming a good or great or just an average professional wrestler. It doesn't, you know, you want to train with the best, but that doesn't mean you can be the, you know, it doesn't rub off is my point, I guess. So I hope she continues to improve, you know, because she has a good look and, you know, they're putting her out there way, way too early. But anyway, legitimately, I do know for a fact, because I believe in the gentleman that told me that they're, you know, she is working out with him. So that's a good thing.
We're winding down this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly, I should say, which means there is plenty of time left for everyone to find out what exactly you're doing now during the week and how they can perhaps purchase something from the living legend Les Thatcher, as well as T-shirts, DVDs, digital downloads of some of your catalog and available for training.
I can sell you a car.
Well, I don't know. You looking to unload one?
No. Oh, wow. No, I would love to do, you know, a weekend training camp. I really would. And if you'd be interested in booking me, you can reach me, lesthatcher28@gmail.com. I'd be more than happy to get with you on the information. And as Vic mentioned, T-shirts, the Briscoe Booster T-shirt, the first ever on the pro wrestling market back in 1972 by Jack Cherry and myself. That's available at Pro Wrestling Tees, as well as the Les Thatcher, I'm a Les Thatcher Guy T-shirt is there also. And Wrestling from the Heartland, Volumes 1 and 2, that's the HWA, which has a, it's like 6 hours of content. Both are two DVD sets, matches, interviews. I'm, along with Joe Dombrowski, doing the voiceovers. I'm giving more of background and historical information. Joe's doing the play-by-play. You can get those at joe-dombrowski.com or at prowrestlinglibrary.com. Of course, the Brian Pillman, show's anthology, the 20th anniversary. That's a four DVD set, over 15 hours of content from all four of those shows, 98, 99, 2000, and 2001. Matches, interviews, auction footage, awards, extras all over the place. Filmandshows.com or at the joe-dombrowski.com or prowrestlinglibrary.com. Did you ever finish looking at all the extras on the Pillman
thing? Oh, my God. You know what? I'm not sure I actually did finish going through every single extra, to be honest with you.
I don't think I have either. I just wanted to mention it. So there's a lot there, man. There really is. And then Saturday, July the 9th, I'm in Sevierville, Tennessee at the Sevierville Civic Center for Heroes and Legends 17. It's a fan fest. And there'll be matches that night, but I'm going to be at the Developmentally Speaking podcast booth from 1 p.m. to 6, sign autographs, take pictures, talk wrestling, whatever you got going on. So join us. And like I say, there's going to be matches that night as well. And now you can also, if you're out on I-75, you jump off on the Tennessee side and at exit 128, Monday through Friday, you can catch me at Mountain Barn Builders at 313 North Main Street in Rocky Top, Tennessee. It's my son's business, and we sell storage buildings, sheds, chicken coops, dog houses, children's playhouses, all that sort of stuff. Come by and check us out if you want to. I'm there from usually 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. And come on by. Our phone number there, 865-207-8457. And like I say, we're off at exit 128 and I-75. If you're in the neighborhood, stop by and check me out. And Victor, you better get out and do some cardio, son. How much more weight you gonna drop?
Well, after the last 2 years, I probably need to drop another 30, but that has nothing to do with the cruise.
Sabbatical from the cruises for at least a year, right?
Definitely for the rest of this year. I think the missus has decided there's some places she actually wants to visit as opposed to being on a floating vacation. So a year probably sounds about right, honestly.
All right. Well, good. Then you can walk some of that weight off.
I got 15,000 steps yesterday. That's the plan.
You and that damn land storm. I don't count my steps.
Listen, Storm gets 30,000 steps walking uphill on mountains and stuff. That's not going to be me, brother. I promise you that.
He's an animal, that Storm guy.
He is. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, no, he'll be shaming me, but the weather's warming up. It's about that time. So, yeah, I'm going to start doubling up on these workouts with a workout here in the house. Because I'll be honest, I'm still a little hesitant in going into the gym. It's still a little too crowded for me. You know, I'm just a paranoid New Yorker. Don't mind me. And we'll double up by going out in this nice warmer weather and getting our steps in. That's how we're going to do it.
I heard that. Well, take us home, big guy.
All right. We're wrapping up this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly for the legend, Les Thatcher. My name is Victor Sosa. Thank you so much for taking time out of, well, that could be Sunday, could be Monday, whenever you're listening to this, to spend some time here with us. And we will be back on schedule this Friday a little later this week.